That's the plain and simple message here. How do you randomize things? You scramble them up. Gamblers often say that a certain side of coin toss is due. Say you got four heads in a row when doing several coin tosses. How much would you be willing to bet that the next toss would give a tails? $10? Say you lost on that toss, would you then double down and bet $20 that the next toss would be tails? A practical way to look at that question. On an Excel sheet, using the random function, I got it to spit out a column of 1,000 random values. One value per each row. Next, for each random value, I converted it to either heads or tails. Visualize 1,000 values in a column made up of either head or tail. Interspersed with values that flip-flopped regularly between heads and tails, I invite you to speculate how often you would get a serious run of the same value coming up across the 1,000 values. I look for runs of the same consecutive type. 6 times I saw runs of 8. If this were coin tosses, that would have meant 8 heads in a row. One after the other, after the other, after the other, etc. On coin toss number 6 of such a run, a gambler would have been upping bets and declaring that the run just had to break on the next one. They would have lost. Why? Because they were counting on a pattern with something where it is patternless. That was just to illustrate my opening point that humans say they get randomness, but in actuality, they don't act like they get it. B. Infinity. Infinity means never-ending. A person born today who lives to be 100 years old will live 36,500 days. That's it. It's not a huge number of days. If he tries to view every URL in the world, he will fail. If he tries to scroll over every YouTube clip, he will fail. He will fail because he will die of old age before completion. Bottomless scrolls are bottomless. Spot them for what they are and remember to not get involved in an attempt to reach the bottom. Act like you know the following. The list goes on forever. You don't. They will tempt you to scroll, swipe, or to click another one. But to this tempting offer, you must say, thanks but no thanks. Avert your eyes and break away. It's either that or allow default chemical impulses to watch another pucking one win out over you and over you until your neck screams, enough! Randomness and infinity seem to be two of the many exploitable blind spots of humans. I'm calling them out here so as to remind you. You can call them out to yourself when you next encounter them and actively break away. When someone is playing, gaming, chatting, swiping, scrolling, for that something something, those blind spots become very effing blind spots. A list of needs with endings and some without endings. Needs with an ending. Water, sexual intercourse, and food. Excluding have a fucking nothing one stuff, but yeah, food. Those fundamental human biological needs have a ceiling, a cessation point, whereby if a human gets enough, they will cry, enough, stop. For a little while, anyway. Needs without an ending. Money wins. Attention. Treats of sexual promise. Importance. Popularity. Approval. Power. Either to accumulate or relinquish it. Select juicy info. Novelty. Likes. Points. Conquests. Status and reputation hikes over competitors. Progression and prowess in skills. There are no natural stops, to our hunger for those things. Are you chasing never-ending things? I think we all are. Many of these are the pursuits of life. I'm not saying don't chase such things. That is unrealistic. I am saying that limited you chasing unlimited things endlessly is folly. We have to remember to go, whoa, horsey. C. Safety in numbers. When you are walking through a rough part of town with some friends, to a would-be mugger, a group makes a harder target than a lone traveller. A counterexample, though. Here is a made-up story. Yourself and 20 buddies decide to kayak down a lively new river. As you set off, you'd be whooping and hollering, bolstered by the camaraderie. You'd be emboldened by the crowd. Say the water flow then happened to speed up. Then it got faster and faster again. So much so to the point whereby no one had the paddle power to make it back to the riverbank. Say the river then whistled and plunged over the middle of a lip of the, recognised all too late, actual Niagara Falls. 21 out of 21 souls would drown. Yes, that would be all 21 out of 21. That was an example of where there was not safety in numbers. All that talk of flows and banks reminds me of an arena that is not made up. An arena where there is not safety in crowds. It is the arena of investments. Like subprime mortgages, for instance. And there are other examples, such as rioting. As the would-be rioter gets carried away, this is a case where there is a false sense of security being created by the crowd hysteria. That does not do the rioter much good once he is ID'd by the police on CCTV in the days after the riot. There is sometimes not safety in numbers. I am bringing these blind spots, randomness, infinity, and safety in numbers, into view for the listener. Have them on your radar. End of aside. Where has gambling gone? Now they put slot machine games on your mobile. That's progress, don't you know? They can start you off with lots of free credits. It makes the tempt of just one more tap even harder to resist, and it couldn't be any closer to hand. The gambling industry have always been dab hands at greasing the pipe that runs between your wallet and their bank account. Hard cash becoming electronic cash or credits. Such a well-designed, slick conversion. You'll hardly know you've done it. That's more progress. Their addiction machines are in your pocket now, just a screen tap away, unregulated and going to remain unregulated. This completes the section on slot machine addiction. It is overbrimming with tactics, tricks, and learnings to be found in corn and in chat rooms and in apps. Speaking of apps, let's take a quick detour into those. But first, a little aside. The Skinner psychology experiment. The Skinner box consisted of a hungry rat in a box, a lever for food pellets, and lastly, an observant scientist named Skinner. In the box was a lever and a tray. When the lever was pulled down, a food pellet was dropped into the tray. The rat quickly learned how to get more food pellets. One lever pull yielded one food pellet. Nicely predictable, no stress. The rat pulled, ate, and repeated until full. Nothing novel to report about that relationship. A surprising thing happened during the experiment, though. If the lever pull sometimes did and sometimes did not yield treat, then the rat pulled the lever like crazy. The rat pulled it way more often and for much longer. Something other than sating hunger was going on here. What additional driver was behind this additional behaviour? It was found that the surprise treat of a winning Liverpool was giving the rat a dopamine uptick, and the frustration or disappointment of a non-reward was giving a stress and a dopamine downtick. Remember the following sentence from earlier in the book? It loves, loves, loves experiences that give an instant uptick of it right after it got a downtick in it. An addictive scenario was uncovered with this experiment. The same findings were applied to us. Now to mention two well-known behaviours from the same ballpark as above. They are, however, distinct from the above finding. I wanted to state them here so as to demarcate them from the finding above. A. You know about Pavlov's dog? How would you get a dog to salivate at the ring of a bell? Answer. Ring the bell before giving the dog a treat. Do this many times. This pairs the two things in the dog's mind. Then one day, only ring the bell. The dog salivates for that treat that does not arrive. It works repeatedly thereafter. Mission accomplished. B. You know how you can condition a behaviour in a subject, let's say a rat or a dog? Reward the behaviour you want from the subject and ignore or possibly punish the behaviour you do not want from the subject. Do this repeatedly and the desired behaviour will be conditioned into the subject. So I wanted to mention A, Pavlov's dog, and B, conditioning, so as to not get them confused with this Skinner box finding. The behaviour uncovered in the Skinner box study is less well known. It can have rather profitable ramifications when applied to humans. Do I have your attention? Let's say your desired behaviour for the rat was to have the lever pulled lots and lots of times, but you wanted to have this happen with a minimum expenditure of food pellets. So the goal is lots of pulls, but with the minimum food pellets used. Okay? Question: how could you achieve this? Answer: first you establish a regular relationship between lever pulls and pellet rewards in the rat's mind. Then wait a while. Then start randomizing the relationship between the lever pull and the pellet reward. Desired behaviour achieved. Gotcha. Got the rat, rather. It works a treat on rats and humans alike. In the slot machine world, it's a way to minimise payouts while keeping the human engaged and chasing the next high. That means more profit. There's a phrase in the slot machine makers' industry: the challenge is to build a better mousetrap. So that would mean that the people who play the machines are considered to be mice and rats, wouldn't it? Stumbling upon things by accident in a lab and then applying them to humans. That's definitely a thing. Quite a topic, that one. The lab could be a food lab, a behavioural lab, a gaming lab, or who knows what sort of lab. Anyhow. This discovery to get lots more lever pulls for less rewards is an application of the tease and chase then thrill or spill. Remember, I introduced this when I talked about dopamine earlier in the book. Now to mention another application of this, a more relatable application. Phone apps. Phone apps supplying buzzing, fizzing feeds of snappy tease and chase then thrills or spill clips. I hear the clock on the wall, I hear the birds outside talking to each other. A gram of that instant coffee, ABC, YZ, where was I? Back to my point, anyway. Why do we return to these phone apps 20 times a day, and why do we find it so hard to look up from them? They have become beloved forgetful-making distraction wells. Women's magazines in the 80s and 90s stumbled upon a winning formula for heavy engagement whereby they stimulated the emotions, mostly negatively, with images of anorexic models interspersed with luxury items. So they made you feel like crap, but you couldn't stop turning the pages. Familiar? So apps, platform that stimulate emotions were naturally going to build upon this. To boot, these apps also powerfully apply the tease and chase then thriller spill scenario. Each clip sets up some anticipation of what will come next. Then the reveal is something surprising. That surprising something always has an emotional hook. Then, as ever, the tease of the next clip is right there autoplaying for you. I believe there's something extra added into the mix here as well. That something extra couldn't be any more closely related to the Skinner box finding. To explain more, let's list out some of those types of typical emotional reveals from clips. It can be anger, rage baiting. For example, some innocent gal getting smacked in a teenage fight. It can be a gross leer. For example, some dude having a gnarly accident. It can be a horrifying near-death miss or a horrifying injury. It can be voyeurism of someone's humiliation. It can be where you snigger at someone getting a takedown or getting owned or getting their comeuppances. It can be a gross-out. As you go from one viral video to the next, you are pulled into one emotional state, then yanked from that state to another emotional state. You actually don't feel so calm inside after a while. Stressed, even. Hankering for a soothing feeling. Does that sound familiar? But wait, you know there are other types of emotional reveals found in clips as well. Let's list some. It can be random acts of human kindness that make you smile. It can be a clip where your point of view is vindicated or bolstered, making you feel validated. It can be exciting scientific discoveries or delightful invention to fill the mind with wonderful possibilities. It can be a gorgeous looking fluid, rhythmically moving through a manufacturing process, calming you. It can be cute and cuddly animals, making you go gooey. It can be sexually desirable humans flaunting their assets, stirring you. It can be a swipe match within a mainstream or not-so-mainstream dating app. So, clips from the first list stress you, and clips from the second list reset you. Now to compare to the Skinner box finding. So, phone taps will become lever pulls. Most lever pulls give a feeling of stress. Anti-predictability. But randomly, once in a while, comes a lever pull that emotionally soothes you, and that random emotional treat feels really pleasant. That sets you to say, yes, I will scroll on just one more. And you do so again, and again, and again. How often will you impulsively and unconsciously tap to see that next clip? May I suggest the answer is the same for you as it was for the rat in the Skinner box? I believe this is the extra piece, the missing piece. The piece explaining why we break away from these apps way less than we should and why we reach out for them way more often than we should. To coin it all another way, your mind's own internal dialogue is basically silenced by whizzing emotional scrambling. Maybe that's why they are also forgetful-making too. That's their playbook. Now you need to come up with your own counterplays. Here are a couple of ideas. Break the habit of reaching for your phone just because stress comes along. If you can, soothe yourself another way. If you happen to be on your phone, then develop a breakaway mentality. What you are breaking away from is the tease and chase, then thrill or spill, treadmill. Now that you know that it exists and how it works, keep it in your mind and break away from that shit. Before the internet and mobile phone, back in the 80s, when people were stressed, a great deal of them reached for a cigarette to solve a stressor. It was a sense-impacting, tactile experience. It gave a dopamine hit and a hit of nicotine once it's made its way into the bloodstream. Once that happened, the stressing thoughts and sensations had been pushed far into the background. For a while. This solution habit came with a nice price tag of health damage. Culture and popular psychology around self-awareness and breathing eventually convinced most people there were better ways to deal with life's day-to-day stressors. These times when people are stressed, they have a tactile experience with their phone. They get a dopamine hit. They get an emotional scramble. They get a distraction and the stressing thoughts are pushed into the background. For a while. If you are feeling stressed, you don't need a cigarette. If you are feeling stressed, you don't need your phone either. What do you need then? I suggest self-awareness to catch the stress in the act. Then deliberate breathing exercises or bodily exercise plus looking at nature. This is to change your breathing rhythm and change how your body feels. Would something along those lines work for you? More on a breakaway mentality. To the tease of watch another pucking clip, you must remember to say, puck off. Then you look up and you look away and say, let me stop and actually think about what I was just watching. Aside, the verb think has become too commonplace these days. The verb think is the go-to verb for every time, for every instance. It is overused and under-concise, in my opinion. When you last started a sentence with I thought, did you have an actual aha idea about it and put that fresh thinking into action? Or did you default to your default action? I would suggest that more thinking happened in the first option and none happened for the second option. There, I just wanted to pick up that commonplace verb to think and give it a quick dust off. Phrases like I rethought or I had a fresh idea are newer for our mind's own ear. End of aside. During your assessment, your eyes remain averted from the screen. Ask, what can I remember from that scrolling session? Next. Check in with your own belly. Click candy. That is what this mindless scroll-holing is it not? If you continually pop candy into your gob for hours, how would you be feeling? If you watch click candy for hours, how good can that be? It's your choice what you consume. Choose consciously. Aside. Here now is a byproduct of this family of mobile app addiction that is worthy of a special mention. Addicts can have apps buzzing on their mobiles. As their device buzzes upon the dashboard of their moving vehicle, Addict Laps permits the checking of each and every buzz, all the time. That spells bad driving. Given enough near misses, some of those become hits and accidents. Accidents maim victims, some of whom are culpable, some of whom are totally innocent. Imagine trying to get to sleep at night when up pops the stark reminder of the damage your lapsed driving wrought upon a totally innocent victim. End of aside. That is about as much as I can say on these new popular apps. I am limited both by my expertise on these apps and by how much this book can practically touch upon. Where we are. This ends the section on comparison of problem habits. To the problems and habits of corn and chat rooms, we compared fast food. We also compared slot machine gambling. And lastly, we nodded toward phone app habits. Next section, we return to chat rooms and thoroughly call out what is up with them. Chat rooms. As promised at the start of the book, here is a more full-blooded swipe at a subset of chat rooms. Consenting adults playing together is what goes on in chat rooms. That's basically it. If all people who used net-connected devices could get their kink on with the discipline to leave on time, with or without what they were looking for, then they would all be going around with naughty smirks on their faces, with zero bad impacts on their lives. People are free to do what they like in my book. I am pro-personal freedom. It's just that the thrills and pitfalls of this stuff are easy to succumb to for those who are susceptible to this sort of addiction. Addictive aspects of chat are now being fostered, just like slot machine gambling is fostered in casinos and bars. Addictifying is one of the things I am railing against. I aim to call this out and spell this out. Next, I lay out some concepts in preparation for spelling out some significant dangers of a subset of chat rooms. There are thousands of genres of chat rooms. A subset of sex chat rooms is dedicated towards BDSM. In this world, power exchange play is common. Basically, one person relinquishes power and does what the other person asks them to do. So you have the dominant who is given power over the submissive who in turn gave it. Both parties can get a thrill out of the exchange when they are well matched. There can be a hint of danger and its associated excitement in this play. Boundaries are explored and pushed in this play. With cybersex and video chat added into the mix, one can get very intimate with that person on the other side of the screen. Intimacy attained in this way brought you to a deeper level of investment and a higher thrill level than was found in other cybersex chat rooms. So it is a dangerous and lucrative area. For this reason, it is the area I will focus on. To lay the ground for the next piece, I need to mention the following checklist. Three things. Safe, sane, consensual. That's SSC for short. Volumes have been written on how to play well in the BDSM world. Those three concepts hold so much. They elegantly boiled it down to SSC. This easy-to-remember and easy-to-use abbreviation is referred to heavily in the BDSM community. In fact, newbies in the community are asked to read about SSC and understand SSC. They are often quizzed on it so as to distinguish them from time wasters. It is abided by when playing with another. Why? Because you'd be dumb not to. In your quest for good, clean fun, why unnecessarily suffer the same bad outcomes as others have who have not abided by SSC? Under the heading of safety comes the concept of limits. These are things that are agreed by both parties and they are out of bounds. The sub will not do them and the dominant should not be asking for them to be done. You can see how it adds some safety guardrails to play. If limits are encroached upon or broken, then play is broken, and trust between the parties is broken, and in short order, communications are broken. If people abided by the checklist in their play, it would be fine. If people were reckless and discarded one, two, or even all three parts of SSC, then trouble with a capital T would come along. Due to shortcutting, say, if people never even heard of SSC, then again, trouble with a capital T would follow during their power play. An example, on the extreme end, of trouble would be in Germany in the 90s, Online, one guy asked another guy to cannibalize himself. The other guy did it. The feaster started with cutting off and consuming his own member. I think it moved on to the guy eating another part of his own body. The dish of the day that time was death itself. So, marks out of 10 for being safe. Not so high. Marks out of 10 for being sane. Not so much with the marks for being sane either. Marks out of 10 for being consensual. 10. If you wish to know more, Google cannibalism in Germany in the 90s. So, that hopefully gives the reader a feel for SSC. Onwards. One subset of power play chat is called findom. This is a shortening of the words financial domination. Think of it as power exchange done with money. A submissive would give some control of money over to a dominant. By way of guardrails, limits were put on the money that would be transferred. The person receiving the money may well have been mindful to maintain a well-earned reputation, that of a dominant of integrity. So, findom carried out within the scene had at least some nod to safety, and both parties played with eyes wide open. The dominant would spend the money as she saw fit, and possibly thank or punish or edge or scold or tease or humiliate the sub in return. The transfer of money introduces actual real consequences to the play. The danger adds to the allure. This is often the case with BDSM play. This play was not that popular and not even that well known amongst the chatrooms of an old school BDSM chatroom site. People who partook in this sort of play would typically have been well versed in the SSC checklist before falling upon findom. Findom has exploded in the blockbuster chatrooms of today, though. It is lucrative for those sites. Very lucrative. Play gets out of hand very quickly if the sub is besotted with the dominant and the dominant is ruthless. Integrity goes out the window fast and greed comes in even faster. In reality, there are just too many people doing findom who are not prepared. Just too many who are susceptible. They dawdle into and are held by these tricked up sites. For these people, entanglement beckons. Other than a shabby adherence to, or no adherence to, the SSC checklist, seen inside blockbuster chatrooms of today, what else is flying under the radar? What else is at play here? Let's explore that SSC list again. Consenting adults playing with each other, abiding by the safe, sane and consensual checklist. First of all, if chatters have never even heard of SSC and limits, that is not good enough. Bad start. If a susceptible chatter unwittingly falls into findom play without even knowing what it is, then he is at a distinct disadvantage and liable to get hooked in. This is like findom where one of the parties has eyes wide shut. I believe this is happening wholesale. I for one saw no signs or warnings to abide by SSC and limits on those popular modern blockbuster sites I visited. As I waft air toward my face, I struggle to recall the name of such a site. Being blissfully unaware of SSC and limits is not a good start, and it will not end so blissfully. Another slant, consenting adults who are sick in the head. You can have adults who are not well or believe themselves to be beyond help. They can be making nutty, reckless decisions during play. You can have adults who have become obsessed and have gone too far down too many rabbit holes and lost all healthy perspective. Here, crazy tasks can become normalized in the hunt for a higher new high. So you can have two consenting adults, one of whom has consented to do whatever the other adult tells them. Some thrill seekers allow this to happen. You can have a consenting adult becoming addicted to the highs that they get from playing, and not being able to stop themselves from playing in spite of the rising punitive life costs to them. This is right smack dab in the middle of sex addiction territory. That hopefully shone a light into the darker corners of some chat rooms. Now to continue with how modern blockbuster sites have picked up this ball and ran with it. Nowadays, on your first visit to a blockbuster chat site, you are guaranteed a hot chat right off the bat. Hot, skilled ladies rise to the top of the popularity lists in these vast places. Within the popular chat rooms that I saw, the hot creators were on camera playing with and toying with not so hot and not on camera subs who eventually started to pay to chat. They pay for their next high, more so. They blindly fall into playing FinDom and playing it with zero guardrails. The DS format makes lots of money because more and more money transfers go on inside those rooms. It makes lots of money just like a Backstreet DS dungeon would command top dollar from its wealthier city slicker clients in the offline world. Creators and contributors are cute terms used in trap rooms. Excuse me, chat rooms, for what are actually the dominant and submissive roles. In turn, dominant and submissive are light, cute terms for what is the mistress and slave dynamic. These in turn are understatements. I think the full fat dynamic is worthy of the labels of goddess and worshipper. Yes, those are cultish terms. This goddess-worshipper level of relationship is a place where heavy addicts wind up. The result would be to seriously empty someone's bank account, which would always, always, always have been done consensually, of course. That way no crime is ever committed. Aside, on the odd occasion when deep into a cyber sex session, a weird physical sensation can randomly creep up on the chatter. It is like an electrical storm. It is about as common as an electrical storm too. Hands shake, and shake nervously to the point where you cannot type. You look at your shaking hands and go, that's weird. These shakes run up your arms, to your shoulders, and onto your neck, and finally to the sides of your head where they reside. Here the sensation is at its height. A chilly tingling stays and swirls over your ears. Then, after a couple of minutes, it is finished. The mix is about 40% weird but novel, and the other 60% creepy and twitchy. I recall feeling very depressed after it. There is definitely a feeling that the experience is not a healthy one. Like taking the first pull from a cigarette for a long-time non-smoker. It's a bit like thin glass inside the head has been broken. I can only guess as to what happens internally. It's as if the dopamine frame of reference in your head cracks, fails and smashes to the floor. You are twitchy and low. With the depression afterwards, it seems like your brain has to re-erect some scaffolding and re-establish a higher normal dopamine baseline. A higher baseline means there is now a higher bar to meet for any new high to attain a good high. It is definitely a physical, measurable sensation. If you happen to have an MRI, a research grant, and a bunch of test participants, get on it. End of aside. To illustrate, what follows is a description of a visit to a chat site I had one night. This was before I quit Corn and chat rooms. I hope it pieces together all the psychological ploys at work and exposes what is going on beneath the hood. Let's not get too hung up on which blockbuster chat site I visited. Needless to say, it was a famous and successful one. Copycat sites will come along. This is always the case with a winning formula. Before this night, I used to abide by my own little safety guide rails. That is to say, I would look at some sites, but not at others. This was a bargaining strategy, so I could continue to use sites while lying to myself that they were not a problem. On this night, I was depressed. Time to binge, I told myself. I plunged straight into a blockbuster site that I had heard about by its reputation. Next, to describe the experience. As soon as you're logged in, you are in a free video chat room. You can click to follow a hot model in a public room, and next thing, you're in a cozy little chat room there with her. You can hear this hot woman speak your name, and you can hear her reaction and hear her replies to what you type. When you're in one of these chat rooms, it just seems to be a cozy amount of chatters. That happy coincidence is no coincidence. That is designed in. So tempting to interact. Your free welcome runs out after a while, though. She will tell you to tip her. Contribute or send or other terms for this. And if you don't, she will block you from the room. I have never paid a cent for Corn or chat in over 25 years of online perving. I was not going to start now. No need to. When your free welcome expires, you move on to another hot model public chat room, and another, and another. Just as you exit one chat room, within 2 minutes another chat room pops up, so you just got to check it out. A sweet string of stolen treats. That's the hook in. You can stay doing this for hours. You can miss meals, blank out and block out thoughts. The reason you don't leave the trap rooms is because you can't leave. You can't resist one more click. The attempts, the teases, the curiosity baits, the lucky dips, the surprise, accidental free delights, the beckons, the ignores, the winks, the traps, the later-ons, the dismissals. Complex stimuli pulsing, speeding, tricked up, optimized and layered, spellbinding. All designed to flow into each other, lead to each other, like the call of the sirens. Through ruby lips, they musically call you by your name, meeting, holding, and dropping your adoring gaze with their stunning eyes. Hold them with a strong stare. Remember? So, yeah, powerfully addictive and rather easy to transfer money are what I'm attempting to convey. So that's the spellbinding piece set out. Now, however, time for some spell breaking. It's all the slot machine tactics again. Repeat, it's all the slot machine tactics again. The same reward pathways are hijacked. So eyes wide open, spot it for what it is. It is addiction by design for profit. Back to the night in question. That little rule you had about never paying for Corn or similar, that can go. Curiosity may best you. Your will fail. I am warning you of this danger. At the end of the late night, I was thinking of setting up some credits and giving just a few dollars to a new Colombian model. You know, to be nice. That 25-year I never pay for corn rule of mine was in big doubt. This model was not some vile skanky webcam bitch. She was a sweet gal trying to make a few bucks. They make it free and easy for the creators, models that is, to join up and set up a room. They have an endless supply of creators, ranging from newbies to very skilled. They designed it to make it super easy for credits and tips to be transferred. They take a slice from each and every transaction. By the end of my marathon session, and purely out of tiredness, I logged off without sending any credit. Then I realised something. It was not only the legions of lonely, horny guys who would become addicts to this. I realised the creators would become addicts too. And yes, again by design. Their dopamine spikes when they earn a reward. Chasing rankings? Chasing attention and status? Outdoing their own expectations? And outdoing the expectations of their competitors? In order to maximise attention and revenue, some fixate upon and chase the body perfect, as promised by many surgeries. As they boil off eroticised rage, as they buzz from power, as they learn to earn, as they chase the next transfer, as they chase the next level, and as they move from naive newbie to skilled creators, they too develop a habit. For them as well, they want to leave, but they cannot. They also cannot stop clicking. Spellbreaker. Sex workers have been betrayed and screwed over the course of their lives. What was done to me, I will take out on you. They hold rage over it. Hate and rage are close bedfellows. Exercising sexual power over lessers, using them, is a pathway to releasing some internalized rage. Eroticized rage is a useful term for this. To me, a creator's face is demure while simultaneously telling of an intent to even up the score. Sex workers despise their clients. This is a quote from a YouTube channel called Soft White Underbelly. In this channel, Mark Leita has interviewed hundreds of sex workers. Watch his channel and judge for yourself whether that is a swiping inaccurate generalization or a pretty accurate one. Chatroom addicts hate themselves, and the sex workers they are being used by hate them too. Back to the night in question. This was the point of the train journey where I got off. From observation and from years of experience in lesser chatrooms, I know where the next bit of the ride leads. If I had returned again and again, and never quit, my downfall would have gone as follows. I would have become an addict. A worse one than I could realise. I would have gone low. For example, I saw a pay piggy give a creator his Apple Card details. All of it. He even SMS'd the confirmation codes. Yes, that's well over grand. Bye-bye. That's why they're called pay piggies. Another spellbreaker. Time to lay out what pay piggies are. What kind of a sad, stupid puck does that sort of thing, I hear you ask? The descent. After the months go by, my self-esteem and my self-confidence would plummet. I would just accept I was a loser addict to all this stuff. I would accept that this is where I belong. I would hate going out and hate who I saw in the mirror. The road away from this would be to replace the addiction with something healthier from real life, like a hobby or good times with true mates or perhaps a healthy relationship. Addiction makes you shy away from such cures. Addiction makes the addict conceal and deny. Addiction maintains slanted reality. Addiction protects the supply. There can be a perverse pleasure to be taken from the chaos of giving up self-control. Faced with this, the self-delusion starts. I would tell myself, your problem is not so bad. Then, as a treat, I would go into the chat room to prove to myself that I had got a grip on it. That's addict think. Another swell idea. I may fix it by becoming a creator. That's more addict think. The addict knows with every bone in their body that they are on the wrong path, and yet they follow it anyway. It is a hard reality that is too much to face. Crazy making. I would avert my mind from questions such as, who even am I? Where do I belong? Along with self-delusion comes its friend, namely self-destruction. I would resign to being a pay piggy beyond help. A pay piggy who belongs to a chat room owned in my phony community. Where else would I go? I would be owned by a creator that knows my secrets and when to leverage them. A creator confident of my weaknesses. A creator who knows secrets such as how your equipment stays limp now. A creator who knows that meanly teasing and contributions are the only paths to my relief. A creator who knows the importance of phony aftercare after a transfer is made. Why? Because it sets up the next transfer rather nicely. A regular empty Joe by day who conceals his secret nighttime bottom feeder pay piggy self. That's who I would be. But it gets sweeter. Even if I did want to seek help, who would I tell? A skilled creator can push deeper into the psyche of an online worshipper than she could versus a face-to-face worshipper. That's because there is more interaction access and more safety. Both addict and creator can carry on recklessly. The creator knows she will never have to meet the addict in person. A skilled creator, who remember is also an addict, would ask the sub to make some self-incriminating pics or videos. As her special chosen one, the addict would jump right to it and get a rush from doing so. The creator may ask the pay piggy his personal real identity, or else the pay piggy would volunteer it negligently and self-destructively. Offers of exclusive attention for a premium price are snapped up. Such prove your worth tasks are completed for a crazed rush of crossing one's own do not cross lines. A clear act of self-rage. Like breaking glass inside your own skull. Graduating to a harder drug, if you like. Now at this stage, the creator would own and have a total hold on the pay piggy. She is all he has and he cannot lose her. A mere frown towards his direction and the word contribute would be all it takes and pay piggy transfers. We are talking fives leading to tens, leading to hundreds, leading to here's all my card details. We are talking services, gifts, effed up tasks, yes, sometimes illegal, where both the requester and the executor get off on the perversity of it. We are talking crackpot procedures, sponsored surgeries, etc., etc. When you are this far down the road, most likely the sexual self-discovery years of your youth are far back in the rearview mirror. When you are this far down the road, if something took you to the next new sexual high, what wouldn't you do? Jumping from paying an online sex worker to paying an actual sex worker is not such of a big jump anymore. Bending sexuality and gender? Illicit rendezvous? On every naughty app there is? Regaling tales of nasty acts? Hurt people hurting? This is advanced sex addiction territory. Compulsion to do acts where ruin is but a matter of time. So that is where this train ride goes. I pulled back from this hellhole and never returned. It was not easy. I stepped over the dips and slips and the tripwires that ran back into it. I resolved to write down my experience and tell my partner all about this and to tell her all about my problem. That site was the most addictive, dangerous site I had ever been on. A company who ran such a site has its stock price rocket in February 2021. I have not mentioned the ballooning effects of a pandemic lockdown or of having their apps on your mobile. A mobile that buzzes with notifications that command to be checked. That would mean all day, all night, 365, access to the exhausted addict who wears it and bows to the addiction. After that last chatroom binge, after some hard truths, and after the tears of both mine and my partner's, decision time had come. No bargaining, no dilution. Time was up. It was a simple choice. Either permanently quit these things and leave the hell, or don't quit them and remain stuck there. Back to the present day. I believe I am a recovering addict. I am also wary, and I believe I understand what a recovering alcoholic means when he says, taking it one day at a time. As you listen to that last tale, if you realised you are deep in the weeds of sex addiction, I can report that I found the book called In the Shadows of the Net. It is by Patrick Cairns et al. It is a good and deep resource. The doctors worked with sex addicts for decades. People who have known ruin. There is reassurance in knowing that you are hearing the tried and trusted words of experts on the patterns of this addiction. Experts on the patterns of this addiction's origins, and experts in the patterns of addiction cure. I will refer to this book again. What's here and what's set to get worse? What's coming down the pike? What is unscrupulous greed's next move? What creations are to come in the name of increased shareholder value? What creations are to come out of questing for hedonistic pleasure? It appears that anything can be made seductive in the online world. What ideas and environments will engage you, addictify you, capture your time, capture your money, and capture your being? Concentrate and combine. Addicts have kind of figured this one out for themselves already. On a big night in, addicts to this stuff will be partaking in sites and interactions that will combine the following to achieve new highs. Many addicts have more than one addiction. As one is quenched with sobriety, up pops a burning desire to indulge in another addiction of theirs. What may be new here is for your friends on certain sites to foster and encourage combinations. That's the tactic, I think, that will be employed to keep the wallets draining. I'm just predicting what is coming soon based on what has happened already. The following is a list of themes, technologies and exploitables. I riffed on some ideas and imagined out how they might be concentrated and combined. The list that follows is dark. I need to flag that right now. I'm not egging on my predictions to happen. Not one iota. The point of the exercise is to make the listener more streetwise as new areas of internet activity grow. Just like a self-defense instructor would mentally prepare his students for different types of hitherto unconsidered, tricky situations. Here is a list of headings, and then after that they are each expanded upon. Drugs. Basic AI. Profiling. Lifelong customer nurturing with the application of AI. Competing against the crowd. Gambling plus chat. Chat plus cult activity. Sex toys on remote. Virtual reality. And lastly, an example. Drug abuse. Drugs and medications can be misused and abused to intensify sexual, dopamine, or adrenaline highs. The drugs misused can be street drugs or legal drugs. You may get a request from an online chat friend to order some new chemical, to which you just say maybe. Or you see so many teaser clips about something that curiosity plus boredom get the better of you and you try something new out. You are then part of that club, the club who has tried that drug. Basic artificial intelligence, also known as AI, or a human who uses artificial intelligence. I should mention that when you see the words like mistress and goddess herein, do not necessarily picture one attractive lady working all by herself all day to talk to her many contributors. There are not enough hours in the day for a successful chat goddess or mistress to milk hundreds of addicts dry. Skilled creators hire ghostwriters. They have partners or staff who make sure the pickies don't go off the boil. Just like every business venture that makes money, it scales up fast. Inhibitors to cash flow are cast aside. Such things as respectful conduct and integrity are cast aside. Each creator who earns the big bucks will have one too many persons who fulfill the following roles behind the curtains. Partner, mastermind, co-conspirator, overlord, ghostwriters, agents, lead generators. I need to mention here that sometimes that pretty face doing all the teasing is herself staff. She works under some overlord with dollar signs for eyes. As for ghostwriters, who would make the best ghostwriters? Well, guys do, of course, because guys know what guys want. Within text chat, AI would be very good to hook in way more prospective worshippers or contributors than a single human could. AI can learn how to control a guy purely with sexual teasing. This is a no-brainer for a successful creator because more victims can be kept chatting on AI than doing similar with paying ghostwriters. Next, profiling. This is where a profitable victim is identified and then they're given extra sweeteners and freebies to keep them coming back again and again and again. Even if they wanted to quit, they would still be getting tempters across other channels to come back. The gambling industry has known this trick for years. So knowing just where to find you may become a thing. Next, lifelong customer nurturing. There are guys getting into more and more deviant weird stuff in their search for novelty. For instance, you could have guys jerking to sophisticated AI-generated cartoons. Their sexual preferences or identities could become 100% divorced from regular hot humans. Their deviant and possibly perverse tastes could be fostered from youth. They can be introduced via a game or a movie or a chat site. Triggering stimuli can be secreted into mainstream media content or just hidden in plain sight. The payload would be to drive addicts back towards their secret haunts and make transactions. I hark back here to the previously mentioned marketer's dirty little playbook. Get 'em young and keep 'em for life. A character or persona can become synonymous with an edgy, guilty pleasure. The playbook would be for that character to become the key holder of your addiction, your ruin, and your only fix, and at the same time a secret that no one else would understand. Your only dealer, so to say. AI is already good at text chat with humans. This is a brave new world. Will AI be used for good? Yes. Well, maybe. Will AI be used for bad? Yes. Well, maybe. Will AI be used for profit? Yes. Absolutely yes. So to illustrate some plays above with